Jeb Bush was asked, and he said, well, I sort of believe it, but I don't think it should be taught in schools.
Oh, yeah. Well, this does fill me, this fills me with despair. I mean, this is not something you believe in or not. I mean, this is a fact. It is a fact. It's just as much of a fact as that the Earth goes round the sun. You can't not believe it unless you're ignorant. And I don't believe those presidential candidates are all ignorant. I believe what they're doing is they think that they've got to say that in order to appeal to their constituency. And if that's true, it's deeply depressing.
So much of what politics is, whether you realize it or not, is sales. So much of what Republicans engage in is very careful language that is developed through a lot of the think tanks that they have. And to their credit, it is good marketing. And it's effective and it works and it gets people to vote against their own interest. I'm currently reading the book, Don't Think of an Elephant. And the book is about political language. And it's about how the Republicans are winning with this and how the Democrats are losing with this. And it's so easy for us to say that, oh God, they're just so dumb and that's how they vote against their own interest. And these Republicans, how can they possibly think that global warming isn't real? And how can they possibly say all these things that ain't true? And we talked on a recent show about how it appears, we have got evidence now that facts mean nothing to the Republican Party anymore. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 190. Thank you so much for being here. You'll notice if you're listening to my voice, it sounds a little strained. And you would think that perhaps I've been screaming at my television because I'm just so upset with what these politics. No. Now, I recorded a two-part episode that was released over the last couple of weeks. And I did the planning for those over a number of weeks and recorded both in the same day, even though I released them over 2 weeks. And then immediately the next day after I finished recording, when I was doing all the editing, I lost probably 80-90% of my voice. So here I am all this time later. I'm barely getting it back. But you know what? We're going to go on with the show anyway because there's a hell of a lot going on and I can't get through it without saying a few things.
Now, the idea, I believe, that money is speech turns our Constitution upside down. Wealth should not be privileged in the courts. In fact, it should have no privilege. Yet at a time when inequality between working Americans and those at the top is starker than ever, the Supreme Court has given the wealthiest Americans even greater power to affect what happens in our democracy. Justice Ginsburg says if there were one recent decision she'd overrule, it's this one. I'm with her, and I hope she gets the chance to do just that.
Author and talk show host Tom Hartman wrote a book called The Crash of 2016 a couple of years ago. Now, the ideas that are in the book are still very relevant, although the title sounds like it's a little bit outdated since we are inside of 2017 right now. But the things that he talked about in that book that would bring about the eventual crash, those things are still in play. But of course, back to the title, it's almost like calling your book The Day Hillary Wins the Presidency in 2016. It's just, you don't know what the future is going to bring. And the science of the book is based on what I have read in a number of books that I've read by economists. Yes, I read books by economists. And it says that there's going to be a major crash about every 80 years. And the reason for that is because that's about the lifespan. So the folks who lived during the last collapse, most of them have died off. And because we have a habit of not learning from our history, it's inevitable that it's going to happen again. And we had a pretty good crash about 8 years ago. Man, it turned my life upside down. I don't know what it did to yours. I now live in a completely different city because of it. And what I'm seeing now, and by the way, whether Hillary or Trump got elected, there was going to be a crash. Because the politics that we practice, the economics that we practice, ensure that we set ourselves up for these crashes. We've got a social system and a financial system based around only helping wealthy people. Look, if the rest of the beggared Yale-manry ends up getting helped, that's not by design. It's only designed to help super wealthy people. The big difference, obviously, based on who we elected in the most recent election, Hillary might have tried to do something about the crash. She might not have been able to push anything through Congress if it were all Republicans. Certainly it would have been better if there were Democrats, that she might have been able to get something through. So what we're looking at now is a collapse, not a social collapse necessarily, you know, to some degree, because every time there's a depression, divorces go up, suicides go up. It's just the way it happens. But Trump and the Republican Party, well, they don't believe in doing anything. They believe in a completely hands-off approach. So what we're going to have with this year's crash, and it could be this year or next year, really, unfortunately, we don't recognize these things until long after they happen. As I mentioned in the past, they didn't call the Great Depression during the Great Depression. They didn't call it that until after it was over. And they look back and they go, man, wow. You know, and even the people of Germany did not call the Holocaust during that time. They called it the matter of the Jews. And then after World War II was over, they had the Nuremberg trials. They go, wow, that was a Holocaust. So, and now we call the 2008 crash, well, it's the biggest that we'd seen since 1929, but what's coming this year is going to be bigger. And what we have is Herbert Hoover. Well, Herbert Hoover, as in the guy who's not going to do anything when the crash happens, because remember, this is all in the design. This is the way that it's supposed to be. We're supposed to have these boom and bust cycles. There's two things that drive stock prices, and you'll hear this a lot. There's a lot of talk right now about the Dow is almost at 20,000. Here, let me tell you what that means. Nothing. In case you didn't hear that, let me tell you what it means. Absolutely nothing. It's a marker, that's for sure, and it's higher than the Dow has ever gone, but 17 was the highest it's ever gone, and then 18 was the highest it's ever gone, and then 19 was the highest it's ever gone. But are you doing better in your life because of that? I would venture to say you're probably not. You're probably doing better than you were back in 2008, but you're probably still not doing as great as you'd like to be economically. And if you are, congratulations to you. There's a lot of folks who are not. Here's the picture we're currently looking at, quoting here from an article written in February of last year. So we're just about a year since this has been written. It's in the article is titled "The Collapse of 2017: Why the Powers That Be Don't Care." With fully 50% of U.S. student loan borrowers in default, representing nearly a quarter of all millennials, the American consumer economy is reaching its end. In 1996, American homeowners had mortgage debt totaling $2.5 trillion. Today, U.S. mortgage debt is valued at $12.5 trillion. In 1996, U.S. loan debt was valued at approximately $150 billion, and today it is valued at approximately $1.5 trillion. In 1996, as a percentage of household debt, consumer credit card debt peaked in the United States. While as a percentage, it has remained a smaller part of U.S. household debt burden, it is approximately $900 billion today. In 2003, U.S. consumers owed approximately $600 billion in auto loan debt. Today, Americans owe more than $1 trillion in auto loan debt. This means that the Americans owe nearly $16 trillion in household debt today. In 1996, the U.S. GDP was valued at $8.1 trillion, and in 2015, U.S. GDP was valued at approximately $17 trillion. In 1996, U.S. household debt was approximately 50% of U.S. GDP. Today, it is 94% of U.S. GDP. So, a couple of things. Stock prices. There are two things that drive up stock prices, and that is speculation and performance. So when a good earnings report comes out, that'll drive up the stock price. Or if the company where the stock originates from comes out and says, we expect us to have a banner year, or President-elect Trump or any of his lackeys come out and say, we plan on privatizing this specific government-run thing, well, then whatever company might take that over, it's going to cause the price of that company to go up. Remember, speculation and performance. That's what drives the stock market. Now, the stock market it bottomed out somewhere in the 6,000s. It's almost 20,000 now. Are you doing better? Are you doing double or triple better? I mean, the stock market's almost tripled. You should be doing triple better. No. Huh. But we're being told every day about how it's almost at 20,000. Break out the champagne. No. No, because it's not designed for us. During the 80s, we decided that it would be a good idea to get rid of pensions and bring in 401ks. There's an article I read recently about the gentleman who came up with the 401k. And he, you know, just imagine a guy, you know, shoegazing and scratching the back of his neck. And he says, yeah, that was bad. Yeah, I shouldn't have done that. Boy, those really didn't work out like I thought they would. But Reagan thought they would. Everybody thought they would, because that's the bill of goods we were being sold. When they say that we should just invest in the stock market, what that means is they want your money. Your money and as much of your money as possible in the stock market. 401ks, put your money in the stock market. IRAs, generally put your money in the stock market. The reason you hear so much about government debt right now, and by the way, we've got two types of debt, of government debt, essentially. We've got the national debt, which we all know what that's like, 17, 18, 19 trillion. It's approaching 20 trillion, you know? But that's not that bad when you consider what the national debt is made of. It's made of treasuries, United States treasuries, treasuries that in the entire history of this country, we have never, ever defaulted on, ever. It's the safest money in the world. So it's not just Americans that invest in it. It's other countries that invest in it as well, because they know that they're going to get their money back. And of course, the other kind of debt that we have, that's the really, really bad debt, well, that would be what is called our trade deficit. And you don't hear much about the trade deficit, which it represents an actual loss from our economy. That is our economy losing jobs, losing money, losing property. When we have a gigantic trade deficit, let's say we buy a, you know, $100 billion worth of stuff from China. And they buy, we're going to go with simple numbers here, and they buy $20 billion worth of stuff from us. Like I said, we're just going to stick with simple numbers. Then there's an $80 billion trade deficit. Now, obviously, the actual trade deficit is much, much higher. So here's what happens. So we'll go with us and China. We buy $100 billion from their country. They buy $20 billion from our country. So there's an $80 billion trade deficit there, which means China ends up with $80 billion more. And every year, we have a gigantic trade deficit. We're buying more from them than they're buying from us. So what does that mean? That means that they are amassing a ton of our money. This is another reason you don't hear about this. And when they end up with so much of our money, well, what are they going to do with it? Are they going to go to other countries and spend our money? No, they're going to come here and spend our money. So after years and years of stacking up our chips, what do they eventually do? And I don't mean to pick on China here. I mean, we have got a trade deficit with any number of countries. What do we do? Or what do? They take that money, they come to America, and they start buying up American things. They start buying American businesses. They start buying American real estate. I believe it's something like 60% of our movie industry is foreign owned. Many of our industries are largely, or at least partially, foreign owned, because the trade deficit shifts that wealth to these other countries. They, in turn, after piling up so much money, realizing that trade deficit is not going to get smaller, they don't come here and buy our products. They come here and buy pieces of America. So the trade deficit is a problem, but we don't talk about the trade deficit because we've been told that's not a problem. The problem is the debt. The problem is the debt. The problem is the 17, 18, 19, 20 trillion dollars. That's the real problem. So let's talk about that debt. As I mentioned before, it has to do with treasury bills. People put money in there. They buy treasuries. That, and then of course that treasury that grows, and then that gets paid off. But here is the real issue. Why you hear so much about the national debt and not the trade deficit. And it's the same reason you hear about just about anything being privatized. And it is Wall Street wants that money. When Wall Street wanted your retirement, they lobbied to get rid of unions. They lobbied to get rid of pensions. And they began promoting the idea and buying off politicians to get you to invest in an IRA and a 401k. By the way, full disclosure, I have IRAs and I have 401ks. It's my idea because I can't get a pension. So this is my only option for saving for retirement. And what they want is they want your money. So they want us to privatize Social Security as well. So now they've got your retirement. They got a piece of your retirement. You know, they take a big chunk off the top. You don't get as much as you would otherwise when you retire because it's privatized. They do the same. They want to do the same thing with Social Security. Why? Because there's trillions of dollars in Social Security. We're being told that the Social Security is going broke. It's not true. It's a lie. It's not going broke. Wall Street wants the money. There's trillions of dollars in the Social Security Trust Fund, and they want that money. And our debt is the same way. They don't want you buying safe treasury bills from the United States government. They want you borrowing money from them instead. They see that there's trillions in the national debt because people are buying treasury bills. And they say, we want that money. They want people going to banks to borrow money and not buying treasury bills. Treasury bills are safe. Treasury bills are eventually going to pay. They don't want you doing that. The argument for privatizing this is the same as the argument for privatizing anything. And it's they want that money. Quoting from the article here, the reason that the U.S. stock market has continued to see its prices climb is because the game is rigged in favor of corporate executives who receive a majority of their compensation in the form of stock options. In the past, when a company turned a profit, it would build a new factory, meet increased demand, thereby driving new demand as more people became employed. But that is not how American companies do business anymore. When American companies do business, rather than investing in the company, they simply put it in the stock options. There's only a certain amount you can pay your CEOs outright cash, but in stock options, there is no limit. And the other thing about paying your executives, the executives of your company, in stock options is when it's in stocks, they have a direct connection to the stock market price. They're going to do things that are going to increase the stock price. But remember, stock price is not a representation of how well we're doing or how well they're doing. It's just how much money those executives are going to walk away from the table with.
Why would we wonder that the American people are angry and frustrated? Look at what we're doing with their tax dollars I don't know if it was 48 or 72 hours that we had to vote up or down on a 2,000 page, $1.1 trillion document. No amendments allowed. And so I say to my colleagues, do not wonder, do not be curious why they're out there flocking to the banner of Senator Sanders, the only announced socialist in the United States Senate. And on the other side, people like Donald Trump, who have never had anything to do with Washington, D.C.
Senator McCain gave that speech early last year during the primary, and he noticed a shift in the way people were voting and the way people were thinking. And I think we were seeing, certainly at that time, the early stages of the collapse. So what we have now is Trump coming in as president. And Trump only cares, and you can challenge me on this, and I will beat you. Trump only cares about his billionaire friends. He has stocked his cabinet with nothing but billionaires, stocked his cabinet with people who have done nothing but promise to destroy the exact same offices that they are in charge of, the organizations that they're in charge of. That's how he's picking them. So he picked a hardcore racist to run the Justice Department, a person who wants to get rid of public schools in charge of public schools, and so on and so forth, and somebody who helped cause the 2008 collapse. Two guys from Goldman Sachs. And now, here's the picture we're looking at. They just spent billions of dollars in the most recent election. Say, Mom, but Donald Trump didn't spend that much money. No, but the people that wanted Trump to become president, the people who are foaming at the mouth about the coming collapse. Because remember, it's not going to hurt them. It's only going to hurt us.
All I can say to my colleagues is that I'm not going to stop because I owe the people of Arizona a lot better than what we're giving them. We owe them and accountability of why we would spend $800 million a year to keep a company in business. We owe them an explanation why we would, over the last 2 years, spend $450 million for two ships that the Navy neither wants nor needs because they're made in Mobile, Alabama. We owe them a lot better than our performance on this omnibus appropriations bill. Now, I'll be glad to talk more about how each individual was blocked by the other side who would not agree to moving forward and the rules of the Senate and all that. But that really doesn't make much difference at the Rotary Club. What makes a difference is that we've wasted billions of dollars of their tax dollars that were neither wanted nor needed nor ever had a hearing, or ever had a hearing in the authorizing committee.
Part of what Senator McCain is talking about there is the military spending. And you'll notice that when it comes to conservatives, they are never – they hate the government so much. They hate the government with the fire of a thousand suns and unicorns above. But they don't mind all of the spending on the military. Quoting from the article here, those same Wall Street hedge funds and banks that caused the last collapse used leverage to repurchase much cheaper real estate rather than – package mortgages. They now have packaged bundles of expected rents as their new collateralized debt obligations. They've bought apartments and houses and rental properties with borrowed money, securitized those investments, sold them to the pension funds. They have once again taken out insurance bets against their own CDOs, and they are ready for the next great collapse. And this time, man, they're going to make a killing. One of the things last time that led to the collapse was what are called collateralized debt obligations. And so what all the banks were doing was they were giving mortgages to essentially anybody with a freaking heartbeat. They weren't verifying incomes or anything like that. They were just giving it to anybody. Then they were going to these rating agencies, which some of them are corrupt. They go to these rating agencies, which rate these things based on some sort of an A, B, C, D, F, you know, system. But the way it works with these rating systems is if it's an A, that's only okay. Melvin, what is higher than A? A plus plus plus. That's three pluses. A plus plus plus. So they took all of these mortgages that they said are good and they're definitely going to pay off, and they went out and they sold them on the world market. And they said, hey, we got this thing rated. It's an A plus plus plus, and it's got all these bad mortgages inside of it. And then those things were bought all over the world. And then they went and they bought insurance on those things, which it's pretty easy to get insurance because, hey, they've got this A plus 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 thing. So they really win no matter what. They've packaged people who are going to lose their, this is 2008, who are going to lose their homes when these things bust. People that bought them around the world are going to lose when they bust. But the original packagers, they're going to make a lot of money on the insurance payoff. Please forgive me if I'm losing. I hope that I'm not, but I want to let you know how this stuff works. Want to let you know how this stuff is going to go. So now, after 2008, a bunch of people lost their house. And they lost their house. They weren't eligible to get into another house because now they've got a foreclosure on their record. What to do? All of these people became renters. So all of these Wall Street hedge fund managers, all these banks got into securitizing, which is turning into CDOs, collateralized debt obligations, collateralizing all of these renters instead, saying, aha. And once again, they've packaged them. They've sold them around the world. You know, they said these people are definitely going to pay their rents, right? Like they're definitely going to pay their mortgages. And they've sold them around the world. And then they've gone out and they've taken an insurance, taken out insurance on that bet that they made. And they can't wait for the freaking collapse. So it's a guarantee. The collapse is coming.
The system is broken. The system is broken and it better be fixed. And I am telling my colleagues, especially those on the Appropriations Committee, this will not stand.
The title of the article is How President Trump Will Wreck the Economy. Quote, the great dollar crisis of 2017 will follow the banking crisis and great recession, and it will be sparked by the Donald. Get to know this word, Trumponomics. That's tax cuts, deregulation, and protectionism. A lot of companies have come out right now and said things are going to be great with the Donald. He's a businessman, right? They sound just as ignorant as his supporters. He's a businessman. He's going to invest in infrastructure. Has anybody seen the Donald Trump infrastructure plan? And yes, there is a Donald Trump infrastructure plan, and it goes like this. Tax cuts, tax cuts, tax cuts, tax cuts. That's it. He's going to give gigantic tax cuts to banks and to gigantic construction companies. And he's going to say, okay, now that I've given you a tax cut, go fix the roads and bridges. Go, Wild Stallion, go. Hey, why aren't you fixing the bridges? Because that's not the way it works. You need actual money. You don't just get to cut taxes. This is the bill of goods that we've always been sold. It's called Reaganomics. They say if you simply cut the taxes, they will take that money and they will put it back in the economy. Unicorns, rainbows, blah, blah, blah. And of course, it never happens because that's not the way things work. If I get something at a bargain, and you know, when I see ads, they always go, you're going to save so much money, you're going to be able to buy this other thing too. When I save money on something, I don't go, look at this money I saved. Let's go spend it on something else. If I save money on something, that's great. I saved money on it. I put it away because I don't have a certain quota that I'm trying to meet with money that I'm trying to spend. If I save money on something, put that money away. And if something comes up later and I got that money there, perhaps I'll spend it, but I'm not going to spend it just because I have it. That's compulsive. That's a great way to get yourself into debt. It doesn't work. It's probably an imperfect analogy, but it's the best I can come up with right now. So that's what he says. He says, just give them tax cuts and they'll go out there and they'll fix the roads and bridges and planes and cars and dogs. And that's not the way it works. You need to have an actual infrastructure plan in place. You know, you can hire those private companies to do it and then pay them to do it, but simply cutting their taxes isn't going to do it.
I mean, I think there are a couple problems with the Trump plan. First of all, there's no requirement that these tax credits go for new projects. So people could just build the things they plan to build anyway and pocket the money. And so that means we're not going to get any new projects. We're not going to get any new jobs. Secondly, there's no requirement that any jobs be created out of it. And third, you know, the biggest infrastructure needs we have in this country isn't for-profit projects like pipelines or utility upgrades. The biggest needs we have are our crumbling water systems, our crumbling roads, our crumbling bridges. And this does nothing for those. It only helps for-profit projects. Some of those projects are good, but most of them, because they're for-profit, will happen anyway. It's just a tax break to make those projects more profitable for their investors.
Quote, Trump is now in charge of nuclear weapons and the biggest armed forces in the world. Far more terrifying, though, and surprisingly little discussed, is that President Trump is in charge of economic weapons of mass destruction, the dollar, the world's only reserve currency. The world's largest economy, the U.S. is about one-third of global GDP, and its largest blocks of debt. The world's investors, one-third Americans, two-thirds foreign, have lent the U.S. government a colossal, unimaginable sum, about $20 trillion. The most dangerous idea that he has put forward as a way to buy back, to deal with America's debt, is to buy it back at a discount. Some have interpreted this as an offer to pay back 85 cents on the dollar on outstanding debt. What is certain is that it would represent, in effect, the first, remember I told you we've never defaulted, this would represent, in effect, the first modern default by the federal government on its debt. As a direct consequence, a spiraling devaluation of the world's sole reserve currency. People said, Melvin, we gotta hire him because he's gonna take a businessman's approach. A businessman's approach. Chances are his tax cutting will lead to more government debt. It's gonna make our trade deficit bigger, and it is going to spin America into levels of indebtedness that would prove unsustainable.
So, where did income come from? He has tons of properties. He has licensing. It's a lot of income, but he's not an income guy. That's why this whole part about his income taxes, they're not going to tell you how rich he is. Mm. The income taxes are going to tell you what tax rate he pays, and that is clearly what he's trying to hide. So listen, we have a rule of Forbes. It's called the Trump rule. Whatever Donald Trump tells us, we generally think he's probably worth about a third of that. That's been true for about 30 years, and they still are saying he's worth more than $10 billion. There is no way he gets towards $10 billion. It's impossible. There's an idea in Trump land that his brand is worth billions of dollars magically. But if you look at what he's put his name on over the years, with Trump steaks, Trump water, Trump vodka, it never materialized in anything. So there's no way you can magically conjure billions of dollars in theoretical value. If he was that good a businessman, he wouldn't be leaving that much money on the table that he's got billions of dollars in profits he could have made.
Trump promised that after the election, he would release his tax returns. He lied to us, saying he couldn't release them before the election because he was in an audit. It's true that he's in an audit, but he's lying about why he can't release them. Actually, he can release them, and the IRS came out and said, the audit has nothing to do with that. You can release your tax returns. Go ahead. But he said he didn't want to, and I think the reason he doesn't want to is because he's broke. Everything he's doing right now is to try to make himself money. He ran for president to make himself money. All these things that he branded, you know, that collapsed, he brought them back out after he started running for president. Trump vodka, Trump, which is weird because he doesn't even drink. Trump steaks and all this other crap that's got his name on it that has absolutely nothing to do with it. He started bringing this stuff out because he knows his dumb supporters will buy the stuff because it's got his name on it. Everything he's done is to make money. He's been making statements in the news lately. And he's had his people go out there and make statements in the news lately. Oh, we're going to privatize this. We're going to privatize that. And then the stocks of the companies that are related to that potential privatizing, their stocks have gone up. Remember, stocks go up on either performance or speculation.
You say, but Melvin, he's a businessman's approach to America. He's taking a businessman's approach to America. You just don't understand business, Melvin.
Here's what I understand about business. In most corporate charters, they sound good, but they by and large come down to one thing: to make as much money as humanly possible. And that's all they're there for. And it's to make as much money as you can by any means necessary.
You don't understand, Melvin. He's a great negotiator. He's going to be negotiating.
I'm pretty sure he's broke, and I'm fairly certain he's not that great a negotiator. Because he only speaks at about a third or fourth grade level, and I'm being charitable here.
Let's take a look at what he did for his business. He's written a lot of books about business. They all seem to end at chapter 11.
You've probably never heard of David Stockman. There was an article that came out a couple of years ago by The Atlantic, written by John Maroney, and it says, quote, "We're going to have a crisis. David Stockman's stark warning for America." So who is David Stockman? He is the budget director for Reagan. He is the guy who essentially came up with Reaganomics. Quoting from the article here, Stockman was in a group of politicians, economists, and journalists who championed supply-side economics, the theory that cutting taxes will lead to an economic boom. Ronald Reagan embraced the theory in his 1980 campaign for presidency, landing Stockman a spot in Reagan's inner circle of advisors. After Reagan won, he appointed the then 34-year-old Stockman to one of the most influential positions in Washington, director of the Office of Management and Budget. So where is Stockman now? Hey, he's pretty much where the 401k guy is going, oops. Well, sorry guys, it turns out I was wrong. But rather than just going and hiding in a hole and saying, oh God, I guess I was wrong about that, Stockman is warning everybody, sell now. Get the hell out of everything. Boy, my God, were we wrong.
So what do you think of this Trump rally?
Well, I said sell the stock, sell the bonds, get out of the casino. I reiterate that call. The bonds have already cratered. They're down something like $2 trillion worldwide, and we got miles to go. This 5% eruption, I think, is meaningless. Some robo-machines trying to tag new highs. What I see ahead is a fiscal bloodbath in Washington for the next year, not the stimulus that everyone's imagining, no big tax cut, no big infrastructure program. What I see ahead is a $20 trillion debt ceiling bomb that's going to go off in mid-March.
David Stockman, along with a man named Jude Winiski, came up with what is called the two Santa Claus theory. And the two Santa Claus theories is this. They go, you know, people keep putting Democrats in power because every time they put them in power, they come up with all these things that people like. And then, of course, we get in there, we start cutting everything. So they said, here's what we should do. We should take away their status as the party of Santa Claus. So when Republicans are in power, and I'm paraphrasing, I'm doing this from memory, Winiski, along with Stockman, says, here's what we should do. And it's called the two Santa Claus theory. When Republicans come into power, they should spend money like crazy. Just raise debt levels. Amazingly. Wait, man. Wait, Melvin. But they're so concerned about the debt. No, they're not. They've never been concerned about the debt. They continually raised the debt during Bush's term, and they never said anything about it. They didn't give two craps until Obama became president. They said, oh, my God, look at this new president spent all this money. How could he? How'd he spend all this money in a day? It's his first day as president. No, it's because it never happened. The Republicans spent the money, and then they didn't say anything about it until a Democrat became president. And the original Reagan did the same thing, just exploded the debts. And this is why Republicans love him. He exploded the debts. And then, you know, and then George H.W. Bush comes in and he goes, well, you know, that's fine. But then Clinton came in and they go, you got to cut everything now. So when Republicans are in power, they raise the debts as high as possible. And they know that when they spend money, because they're not stupid, they just play it on TV. When they raise debts as high as they can by spending tons of money, well, things look great. You know, you put things on a credit card, everything looks awesome until the bill comes due. So they spend money like crazy. They cut taxes, but they spend money like crazy. And people go, hey, wow, things look great, you know? And then when a Democrat comes in, they go, you gotta cut everything. So what they do is they become the party of Santa Claus without acknowledging it. And then when Democrats come into power, they force the Democrats to shoot Santa Claus.
What part of this is going to work? Is any part of this going to work?
I don't think any part of it's going to be enacted. That's the key thing. This isn't 1981 with Ronald Reagan when we had a $1 trillion national debt. This is $20 trillion. Reagan got his tax cut through by a fluke because he got shot, and for a couple months there was some sympathy. Otherwise, it never would have happened. This isn't 1965 when Johnson had some huge mandate. Trump doesn't have any. Trump has no program, no mandate, a frail majority that will shatter in the House. The Republican Party is a coalition of gangs, you know, neocons who basically only care about defense and a few more wars, social cons who are cultural warriors, fiscal conservatives in the Freedom Caucus who will never buy massive additions, you know, to the deficit, which frankly will hit $800 billion in Trump's first year before one dime of his program.
So Stockman, along with Art Laffer, the creator of the Laffer Curve, we'll talk about that in just a moment, and Jude Winiski, I mean, they all essentially came up with Reaganomics, right? And Winiski, I believe, has passed on. And the Laffer Curve is, of course, the fake graph that Art Laffer came up with, saying that if we simply cut taxes, it's going to spur growth. And it has never, ever, ever, ever worked. It is a religion, which means it is backed up by nothing and it can't be proven. People simply believe in it. So this guy who helped come up with the religion of Reaganomics, which is essentially neoliberalism, is now ringing the bell and ringing it very loudly and saying, get the hell out of this economy. Holy crap, we were wrong. Wow. You know, and so he's trying to play the good guy now. You know, he's the guy that essentially set the house on fire and was just going to watch everybody get consumed with it. I know I'm not great with analogies. He was going to watch everybody get consumed in the fire, watch everybody die. But then he said, no, I should help those people get the hell out of the house. Maybe one room of the place is on fire. Nobody's in that room. So he's running through the house now and he's going, get the hell out of this house. I just set it on fire. The whole thing's going to be consumed. Get the hell out of this house. And oh my God, who the hell's that guy? I don't know. Let's just get the hell out of that. Ah! So he's trying to do that. But I think a lot of people are asleep, which means it's going to take a little longer to get them out of the house. I'm terrible with analogies. It's going to take a little longer to get them out of the house. And a few people are going to be consumed. A few people are going to be lost, so to speak. But when we're talking about money, and when we're talking about economies, when we're talking about the country, what we're really talking about are people. People that will be suffering real consequences at the hand of these billionaires. You, America, you know, popular vote notwithstanding, you just elected an authoritarian dictator, a racist. a guy who believes very strongly in Reaganomics, a very wealthy man, although he's probably broke, who has never, A, done a day of work in his life, B, has never done anything for the working man. And for all that he talks about hiring Americans, just put in to bring in more foreigners, just put it with the State Department, to bring in more foreigners to work at his Mar-a-Lago estate, not hiring Americans. Everything he says is a lie. But Trump himself has also become a religion. And the true believers, the cult members, believe in it no matter what. So when we talk about money, collapses, economies, the stock market, houses, collateralized debt obligations, debt, what we're talking about is people and the real impact that it's going to have on people's lives. So what can we do? Well, a great thing to do would have been to demand reform after the 2008 collapse. One of the things that happened after the 2008 collapse was President Obama came in and said, you know, we're gonna do something about this. We're going to have a giant stimulus. We're going to start putting regulations on these banks so that they can't do this again. And then came the Tea Party, right? As if the Republicans couldn't screw this up on their own. Then came the Tea Party. Don't you dare do anything, you black, blah, 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 right? All this screaming and hatred tinged with racism. Don't you dare do anything. The government can't do anything. Don't you dare. And we didn't get anything, right? The Tea Party did their part. The Republicans did their part to make sure that we couldn't regulate. They said the problem is too much regulation. Yes, I understand that the banks are getting to do whatever the hell they want, but the problem is the fact that we have too much regulation. Oh boy. And so nothing got fixed after the 2008 collapse. All the structural things that led to the 2008 collapse, they're all still there. You know, the wobbly legs on that table, the insides have been chewed out by termites, and it's still there. And it could come crashing down really at any time. And that's kind of what we're waiting for. We're just waiting for the termites to just sort of finish off one of those legs. Because when one goes, that's when they're all going
to
go.
Well, I thought Trump was going to win, and that's why there's a disaster down the road. He can't govern. You don't realize how dysfunctional Washington is. This is just talk about...
Yeah, but if Hillary, you were calling for the market to have a serious correction when everybody thought that Hillary was going to win. So
I'm calling for, if I may say, Scott, I'm calling for a serious correction. I'm not smart enough to know when, but I know this market is basically betting on a huge fiscal stimulus. Almost
sure.
Everyone realizes the Fed is done. There's not much more it can do. And my point is this huge fiscal stimulus isn't going to happen. There is going to be a fiscal horror show that we haven't visited for the last 30 or 40 years.
The Fed, the Federal Reserve, which, by the way, as I pointed out before, is neither federal nor do they have any reserves. The Federal Reserve, which loans banks money, has been operating at very, very low interest rates. You can't do that. It sounds strange. This is economics. You know, it's a dull science, as they say. But you have to charge money when you loan money. You have to. You know, what they've been involved in is something called quantitative easing. And through quantitative easing, they have kept the markets, they've kept interest rates really low. So your bank is loaning you money for a car at, like, if you've got good credit, like 3%, right? 2 or 3%. If it's on a house, they're loaning it to you, or they were loaning it to you at like 3.50 or 3.75 or 4%, which is pretty, or historically pretty great. But they've been getting that money from the Federal Reserve at 0%. So do the math in your head how much money they're making on the money that they loan to you. And at 0%, oh, you can't go much lower. And you'd think at 0%, my God, the economy must just be gone gangbusters. Well, the economy is a bit of a paper tiger. It seems very fierce. But, you know, the first heavy downpour and strong wind, and it's gone. It's that vulnerable. And so they've started raising interest rates. Well, we've been propping up the economy in a fake way, and now we're raising interest rates on what is still a fragile economy. And of course, the other thing that both Republicans and Tea Partiers fought for was, whether Tea Partiers realized it or not, was keeping these executives that caused the collapse out of jail. The problem for conservatives and teabaggers was, well, they just dang dumb government just can't do anything right. when the problem was these crooked bankers buying crooked politicians, getting this crooked system put into place so that they can do whatever the hell they want. They make money on the way up. They make money on the way down.
First of all, it's a facade that Donald is a great negotiator. There are actually professors of law who teach litigation and negotiating strategy, and some of them have spoken about that Donald is not a good negotiator. Secondly, this isn't negotiation. This is an erratic personality that we're going to have in the Oval Office behaving the way he's always behaved. He's not deeply steeped in these issues. Donald doesn't understand the important historical issues, including U.S. military obligations to the government in Formosa. And the Chinese government initially responded to this in a very thoughtful, measured way. Now you're seeing them ramp this up. And you can be sure they are out there talking to Pacific Rim countries and saying, hey, we're the country of the future. You want to look to Beijing, not to Washington and that guy who thinks that tweeting is a form of diplomacy.
So this from the conversation by J.L. Zagorski, who is an economist. The article is titled Musical Chair Economy, How to Get Ready for the Economic Recession Coming in 2017. Quote, my outlook for 2017 and beyond is that the U.S. economy will likely see another recession. However, capitalist economies do not simply grow steadily larger. Instead, their long-term growth is periodically punctured by downturns. The record of all economic ups and downs over the last century and a half shows that the U.S. economy has experienced 33 recessions. Now, they're not all bad. I mean, they're not all super bad like 2008 was. This means recessions roughly occur every 5 years. Our present economic expansion has lasted for longer than 5 years, probably because of quantitative easing by the Federal Reserve. The Great Recession ended in June 2009. But hold on. What constitutes a recession? Okay. The dates when recessions in the United States begin and end are declared by a nonpartisan organization called the National Bureau of Economic Research, or NBER. When the NBER, a small committee currently comprising nine professors, officially decides when a recession has occurred, but it does so usually after a fact. Deciding when a country is or is not in a recession is based on the numbers that are constantly moving and is not sensible. So remember, it's going to hit. We're not going to know when it's going to hit. It's just going to hit. And we won't know long after. So I know that makes us like the NBER is kind of useless. But they are the people that tell us when this stuff happens. So it's been 5 years, okay? So about, you know, long, 5 years. You know, every 5 years we have ourselves a recession. Well, the last one happened at about 7.5 years ago. Now, even though many indicators look amazing, if history or any guide, we are doing a big way for an economic downturn. In U.S. economic history, no economic expansion has ever lasted longer than a decade. So at the very latest, we're looking at like 2019. But we just put an economic illiterate. It seems weird to call him that, but he's not a great negotiator. He's not a great businessman, and he's probably broke. I think that's why we don't get to look at his tax returns, because he's probably broke. Either that, or he's involved in some incredibly crooked stuff that he doesn't want us seeing. So we're looking at a decade at the very, very longest. The current economic expansion, so 7.5 years, is the fourth longest on record for records that go all the way back to the 1850s. Melvin, it's not good. Just give us bad news and not tell us what to do next. So I'll give you my perspective. How am I preparing for the next economic collapse? I've talked about this in previous shows. And one of the things that I'm doing is I'm not going to quit my job. Now, wait a minute. I know that's not on everybody's radar. I was thinking of quitting my job, Melvin. Well, Melvin was thinking about quitting his job because Melvin started a business and that business is doing pretty good. But that business is based on an industry that really only does that good during good times, because I'm in the wedding industry. And it's not that people aren't going to get married, but maybe they'll just have a boombox and they'll have, you know, Uncle Joe print something off the internet and officiate the wedding for them. And then that's how they're going to get married. They're not going to hire a DJ for $500. They're not going to rent, a venue for a couple $1,000 and get caterers for another $1,000 or so and then get a photographer another $500. And they're not going to do that if times are hard. And I recognize that. I know I haven't been in this particular industry a long time, but I know a fair amount about economics, economies, how these things work, different industries, what makes them good, what makes them not so good. And what I mean by that is how well they operate in any type of economic, either up or down. Of course, everything does great in an economic up, but not everything automatically drops in an economic down. One of those things, of course, would be food. Food will drop a little bit, but people still need to eat. And then, of course, housing. A lot of people will end up getting on housing assistance, but by and large, people will still have a place to live. But things like concert tickets and movie tickets and things of that nature, well, trips, that kind of stuff's going to go by the wayside because it's a luxury and not a necessity. So for me, I've been at my job a number of years, and I'm damn near the top of the totem pole. And for me to get laid off from my job, my company, which is a large chain, would almost have to go out of business. Now, that doesn't give me a guarantee, but if I quit and my business fails and I can't get into another job, oh, Melvin's going to be moving to another city again. So I'm staying put, and I'm going to stay put in my day job until after. Well, so I have a day job. That's the one I was going to quit. I'm going to stay put in my day job until after the economy starts coming back. So that means that it's going to put me into this for another couple of years. And yeah, that's not what I wanted to do. I wanted to hang it up and I wanted to go into business for myself. But somebody, and I won't say their name, somebody decided that what they wanted to have was a racist, homophobic, orange Hitler, Nazi, blah, blah, blah. You know, they wanted this guy to run the economy because he's so dang gum smart and he's white and all these other things. And you can't pick presidents that way. The fact that he speaks at a fourth grade level, and I say that not to say, well, oh, he's so dumb, he must have not got past the fourth grade. Clearly he did, but he knows in order to speak to his supporters, he has to speak at that very low grade level so that his message can get across to more people, you know, especially when you're going down south. And I'm sorry, but there's still a lot of racism down there. And I happen to think that only ignorance and racism tend to go hand in hand. You know, and you folks down there, you bought his message hook, line, and sinker. You were all over it. Even his super-duper racist message, even after the KKK came out from you, it's fine. It's fine. It doesn't mean anything. Actually, it does. And I don't know that Hillary would have been that much better. Remember, we were essentially headed for a collapse no matter what. Because what we have in place, the system that we have in place, is not designed to help you and I. It's not designed to make our lives better. It's not designed to make us rich. Yes, I understand people, most folks, tend to see themselves as temporarily embarrassed millionaires. Oh, I just haven't made my $1 million yet. No. No, you're never going to. Because the system that's in place is designed to make sure that you are not able to ever get there. It's to keep you in servitude. So what I would encourage everyone to do, and even though David Stockman says, get the hell out of everything, sell everything, what am I going to do? Am I personally going to get the hell out of everything and sell everything with regards to stocks, bonds, and all that? No. What I really have are a series of retirement accounts. And those retirement accounts took a gigantic hit after the 2009 collapse. And I know some folks who, when they got that hit, they got those investments out. They lost all that money, so they pulled their investments out so they wouldn't lose any more money. I left my money in, and it eventually recovered. So yes, there's going to be a collapse. I just have investment accounts. I don't have bonds and all that stuff. I don't buy individual stocks. But I'm going to leave my money where it is because it will eventually come back. I'm saving cash now. You know, I'm making sure that my mortgage is all paid up. I'm caught up on everything. I'm making sure to not run up any gigantic bills, any gigantic credit card bills that I might have to pay after the economy takes a dump, which is going to make things a lot harder. So there are things that I'm putting into practice now to try to limit the amount of damage that will be done by the next recession. And I would say the same for you. Assess where you're at in your life. Try coming up with a plan. You know, if you've got investments, and this is not an investment show. Yeah, I understand some of this stuff, but I'm not a financial advisor. You know, I know about some of this stuff, but I'm not an expert on it. But I am into economics in a big way. And that stuff I understand. And I'm seeing a lot of the hallmarks that I saw prior to the 2008 collapse. I remember how crazy people were going, can you believe that the stock market's almost at 14,000? Oh my God. So what? It means nothing. It's almost at 20,000 now. That means nothing. But I saw the same kind of excitement coupled with CDOs, which we now have, coupled with crooked financial instruments. I'm seeing all that same stuff now and I'm going, aha, that's the same stuff I saw right before everything took a dive last time. So now it's up to you what to do. And who knows what's going to happen with President Twitler. You know, I mean, I don't think he's even going to make it through his first term, but we're still going to be left with a gigantic mess. And it is a mess that we unfortunately brought upon ourselves. We chose it. We honestly did. So, Melvin, I'm not involved in politics. I don't understand all this. No. If you are involved, of course, you understand how things work. Of course, if you are not involved, it doesn't matter because you're going to be affected no matter what. So whether politics is your thing or not, you're going to be affected by what all of these politicians are doing. And what they're doing is they're selling you out. And they're spending your money. And they're making sure that they get rich while you get poor. And perhaps this is the kind of thing that, unfortunately, that we need so that we can see the error and the way that we have been doing things. And after these things are over, if they're bad enough, like they were in 29, you know, or 1860, if they're bad enough, we eventually come back from them stronger and better. And with a gigantic collapse, we are more likely to put in place safeguards to make sure that the stuff doesn't happen again. It's going to be long. It's going to be hard. The road is going to be bumpy. And there will be great suffering by we, the working people of America. But we can put in place some structural changes. Start getting involved now. Start looking to people who you can put into office that don't believe in the way the economy has been run. Don't believe in neoliberalism. Don't believe in Reaganism. You know, people that will fight for an economy that's going to be good for you. You know, and then, of course, start looking at your own financial house. Make sure you're not carrying a lot of debt, things of that nature. And I know we don't all have that luxury. Plan for it now, because when you put Trump in there, like I said, it was going to happen no matter what. But when you put Trump in there, all you did was guarantee that the coming collapse is just going to be as painful as possible. But we've gone through it before. We'll go through it again, and we'll come out stronger on the other side. As I've mentioned before in previous shows, what really binds us is our economics. Yeah, we get caught up in stupid wedge issues like guns and abortion and all these things, but really you and I have the same economic interest. And it's time we talked, and it's time we started working together, and it's time we started realizing how the deck is stacked against us and how we can work together to make these particular things better. And I say these things not to frighten you, you know, not to make you run out and start buying gold or something stupid like that, but to make you realize that elections have consequences. And the consequence of this particular election looks like an economic collapse. It's a pretty high price to pay, but perhaps in the future, we will start paying more attention to what is going on, to what is being done in our name in D.C. and beyond. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store or at Podbean. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. There you can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, or hate mail is just a general statement or inquiry. You can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So for you to reach out to us, and as always, thank you for listening, and sorry about my voice today. You can hear it. Oh, it's barely coming back. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and a big thanks to you for listening. This is Melvin signing off, and now that I've woken you up, good morning.